Good evening. I'm Father Dominic. Well, see, this can be an adjustment for me because I teach high school kids and they never are quiet when you say anything, so it'll be different now. Hopefully you guys are, I don't have to send anyone to the office from this class. But my name is Father Dominic Bauck, 29. I'm from Dickinson, North Dakota. The youngest of seven kids. I'm here at the cathedral and also chaplain instructor at St. Mary's Central High School, so I don't know. I like coffee. I should indicate my favorite sports team so you can like or dislike me based on that. But, oh, that's terrible. Oh, man, that's bad. Thank you, yeah, that's really poor. It looks like an airplane. Okay, this is going to be even better. Broken.
Dolphins?
No, no. Different sport. San Jose Sharks. Okay, New Orleans Saints. And then baseball. This could get me into trouble.
No.
White Sox. The Chicago White Sox. Luckily they're horrible, so if you're a Twins fan, you don't have to feel threatened by that. All right.
I need one more of those, too.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about the existence of God. So, one thing I've been telling my high school students that God does not equal Mount Everest. So I say, they're all conditioned to give certain answers for different things. You say, like, what's the most important thing? What should be the most important thing in your life? They say, God. You know? And just to bring them a little closer to, like, the truth, it's not exactly right to say, what should be the most important thing in your life? God. Okay, well, Mount Everest is a big thing, right? And that exists. And it probably has almost no impact on your life, right? So Mount Everest is huge, very, you know, daunting. It's a large object. It exists. It definitely exists. No one argues that. And it exists and has no impact on your life. Okay, so God exists, which we'll talk about today. But just that God, if God exists in your life like Mount Everest, then it's not that big of a deal. It's definitely not the most important thing in your life. So what should be number one at all times is a relationship with God. So is there anyone married in here? Right, Lindsay? Your husband Wade?
Yep.
Okay, so so what we're going to talk about today is whether God exists. So if I asked you, Lindsay, does Wade exist?
Yes.
Yes, he exists. Okay, good. That's it. That's the most important thing, right, for you, that he exists? No. Okay, so there's a lot more that goes into being a husband than him just existing. So today, God might look a little bit like Mount Everest. But that's because we have like 19,000 classes left. Okay, so today we're just going to be kind of looking at the fact that God exists. So for Lindsay and Wade to be happy together, it's not just enough for Wade to exist for Lindsay, right? So just for like us, if God is just like Mount Everest, where we're just talking about him existing today, that's just the beginning of the story. That's not at all the goal of like what it means to be Catholic, just acknowledging that God exists any more than I say Mount Everest exists, right? If God has no impact in your life, then it's like, well, you know, who cares? But today we're just going to establish the fact that he does exist, because it is a little harder to realize that God exists than Mount Everest exists. Although, how many people have ever seen Mount Everest? Anyone? But we all believe it exists, right? That's interesting. So we'll start. I'll just keep this up here. Number one, relationship with God. Just so you don't forget. It's really the most important thing in life, obviously, if anything. That relationships are more important than possessions, more important than sort of political beliefs. Okay, so say, who wants to be an example? Can I make you an example?
Sure.
Okay, so Chrissy is, we all come into the room, we'll use Deb, that's safer, because she's tough. I don't know you as well. Okay, so say you come in for catechism class, what do we call this?
RCIA.
RCIA. Okay, they come in here for RCIA, and the first person flips the lights on, and they see Deb laid out on the floor, deceased. It's very sad.
Oh, no.
She's got a few bullet wounds. Okay, it's very sad. That's what Imani is using as an example. Okay, if the investigators come into the room, what are the first things they ask?
What happened?
What happened? What happened? Who did it? Colonel Mustard. Candlestick.
When?
Why?
Try one more.
How?
Yeah, we know where, kind of, because... Although it might not be evident, but we'll just assume that she was Belle, but we're not. Okay, so these are kind of the standard questions of investigation, right? So if we look at this murder, all the forensic evidence is going to point us to these questions. Except for which one?
Why?
So we can determine that I have gunpowder residue on my fingers, right?
Also, you did it.
My lawyer told me not to answer anything. Okay, so these questions are all answered by forensic scientific evidence. But the question of why I did it, that's much more interesting, right? So like old novels, especially like mystery novels of like, why did he do it? Or, you know, they're more interesting. Who is pretty interesting too. But these are kind of by science, you can figure out who did it. But why is a much deeper question, right? And so when we look at the universe, all these questions can be answered by science, how the world came to be. Now, science itself doesn't offer any definitive answers. It can, just by its like by the very nature of what science is, it can only offer theories of where our world came from, what transpired. And so even if so we're gonna talk about like the world, you, me, like I can say this with how did I come to be, my parents? When, 1989. Who? I'm me. What am I? I'm a human being, pretty sure. And where, I'm right here. But why am I here? That's a much more interesting question, right? I can't open an anatomy textbook and realize, like, why am I here? That wouldn't make any sense at all. It could tell me how I got here, my mom and my dad, but it can tell me why I'm here, right? Everyone has to answer this question at some point in their lives. For some people, that question will just kind of defer to these, of just saying, well, because the universe somehow mysteriously came to be randomly, and because this planet was randomly this distance from the sun, and because this protozoa evolved randomly into, whatever, and then eventually they grew legs and I came to be. Okay, so that would be like random. We'll talk a little bit about that. That's the one option. The other option is somehow that like, all existence around me has like some sort of purpose, including me. Now, does that mean, we get into that a little more maybe further down the line, it doesn't mean like every single thing is determined for me before like I choose it, right? That's a different thing, and we don't talk like that. But basically, in your life, you have to come to a conclusion of whether, are you here randomly? Or do you have a purpose? Oh, no, not you. You have a purpose. Comic relief, that was your purpose. Okay, so did I come to be randomly, or do I have a purpose? And that goes for like, everything around us. Is everything random, or does everything have a purpose? Which isn't to say, like, every single, like, you just setting that cup down doesn't have, like, some huge cosmic significance.
Right.
But is it just, like, is like, basically who you are just an accident, in other words? Or is there something deeper behind it? So even if the Catholic Church, who knows, who can kind of like rattle off the book of Genesis chapter 1? Anyone?
In the beginning, God created
heavens and the earth,
yeah.
Formless and void, blah, blah, blah. Created light, created day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How many days?
Seven.
6 days.
Six. Right,
seventh day he rested. So that's like the standard account, right? And so then what happens, you know, then there's Adam and Eve, they're in the garden, they sin, they have Cain and Abel. Cain kills Abel, very sad. Then they have Seth, and then so on, so on, so on, so on. If you calculate it out, it's like 5,000 years, right, before Christ, and then we got 2,000 more. So basically, if you're just going by, like, strictly Bible is science history textbook, Earth is about 10,000 years old. Now, what's another theory about how the world came to be?
The Big Bang
theory. The Big Bang theory. Who came up with the Big Bang theory? Anyone know?
He was a priest.
He was a priest, a Catholic priest.
It was.
Whoa! Big Bang Theory, Catholic priest. What's that mean? Well, that means a lot of things. He's a Catholic priest, like, in good standing, too. He wasn't some sort of renegade or whatever. And this is, like, 100 years ago, back when they said Latin Mass, all that stuff. Okay, Big Bang, Catholic priest. What does it mean? Church loves apples, science. Okay, church loves science. Science seeks the truth. Church seeks the truth. The church is seeking the truth, science seeks the truth. If science comes up with something that's true, the church says, that's great, look at that, that's great. That's why we have minds. God gave us minds, we use them. Church loves science. Okay, also, just as a disclaimer, Big Bang is a theory. So even your most hardcore science guy would say, it's just a theory, we don't know. No one has a camera from 4 billion years ago. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is Bible does not equal... Well, first, the Bible contains no errors. That's a matter of faith. Bible does not equal modern science or history. So, the Bible is not written like your ninth grade science textbook. The Bible is not written like your history textbook. God didn't inspire someone saying, on the first calendar day, that this was what happened. And let me spell that out for you. And the guy's like, okay, could you repeat that, God? Oh, okay. One evidence we have for this, so on the days of creation, on which day was the sun created?
One.
Light was created on the first day. Sun was created on the fourth day. How could we have a day before the sun? Isn't a day defined by the sun?
Well, how could they have light before the sun?
Another clue. One answer to that is that if you were alone in the desert and you had no education, what would be like the greatest thing in your life?
What do you mean?
What would be the most amazing thing that you see?
The sun.
So, yeah. If you're going to worship something, it's probably going to be the sun. Many ancient cultures worship the sun. It was just like, what gives life? The sun. What gives light? The sun. What, like, warms me? The sun. Okay, so the sun is like, if you just had to, like, shoot from the hip, like, what's the most amazing thing that I could see? The sun is a pretty good candidate. So basically, all ancient cultures worship the sun. So the author, how many gods in Judaism?
One
God. Okay, so... If there's one God, can the sun be a God? No. Okay. So if the sun is created by God, first of all, that means God's up here, and then he created the sun, so the sun is infinitely less. God is greater infinitely. I'm sure that's really helpful. Okay, God is infinitely greater than the sun. It also says the sun isn't even the source of light. Who's the source of light?
Jesus.
God is the source of light, right? So, God created light without even the help of the sun. So, forget about the stupid sun. That's insignificant compared to the power of God. Okay, so that's one of the things. But the point I'm making here is that if the sun's created on the fourth day, we're not talking about calendar days in the scriptural account. If we're talking about calendar days, how do you have three calendar days without the sun? It doesn't even make any sense. No one had, like, God did create like the stopwatch on day two. No, he didn't do that. So the author of the account in Genesis is clearly not making scientific claims about how many hours creation took, okay? Does anyone have like an argument against that? That's...
No, I was just wondering, what did he create on the second and third day? Because was it like the whole, like, let him create light? He kind of, like, thought about what he was going to do, and then he moved to the earth? And then
yeah,
it was, like, created
land, the sea,
after that?
Waters, separate the waters, basically the earth. This is the land. So there's a parallel.
Does he mean he picked
Jesus
first?
I'm a Catholic, so I don't know the Bible that well. What?
Is that what he means?
I'm sorry?
When he created light first, does he mean he picked Jesus first?
No, like, this is the day of resurrection. So if you... have like, this is great, you know.
Yeah.
One thing, the church is like a fence around a playground. So this is the playground. The church says, all the church does is say like when you're, what comes to you is studying the Bible, if you have some sort of theory or whatever, all the church says is, okay, you're outside the playground, you gotta get back in. So if you want to draw an analogy from day one, light, Jesus rose on the first day, which is the eighth day, that he's the light of the world. Yeah, you know, it's a beautiful reflection.
Okay.
It's not like contained in the, maybe it is, but anyway. So earth and then humans, then the last day, all this was good, this is very good, then God rested. But that's the point I'm making is that scripture is not telling you scientifically how the world came to be. So church, that's why the church loves science. Anytime science says, maybe the universe is 4 billion years old, we have evidence for that. Great! That's great. If all the scientific textbooks and journals and whatever else tomorrow came out and said, the earth is 10,000 years old, great! The church doesn't really have a dog in the fight. So sometimes when you watch the news or read the newspaper or whatever, you sometimes get these people who are biblical fundamentalists, which take the Bible, we take the Bible literally, but not literally as, like, everything in the Bible is true, but not true necessarily in the way you think it's true. We are not fundamentalists. So if the earth was created in 6 calendar days, if your reading of Genesis says, I have to believe that the earth is created in 6 calendar days, can you believe that? Yeah, if you want to believe that, you are justified in saying, I think that this is the best account. You're also justified, probably in some ways more justified, but you know, the church leaves it up to your own kind of prudence to decide this. But if the evidence for you stacks in the favor of the earth being, or the universe being 4 billion years old, you know, go right ahead. Because the church is not making scientific claims. It's making claims about truth, morals, about God, and about us, but not about history as we see it. Does that make sense? So anytime you hear that kind of debate of like, basically a Richard Dawkins here and some guy, some, you know, pastor or whatever here, evangelicals often, that's a debate that the church doesn't even really enter into. It says, let's find out where the truth leads us, okay? And then it'll critique both, it'll, you know, accept some things from both, but... So what evidence do we have that there's purpose in life rather than life is all random? Is that, ever get what I mean by random? So Big Bang Theory, the way the Catholic priesthood have envisioned it, is kind of everything came from this original event, but where did the stuff for that original event come from, right? You either have to say there's some infinite being that we call God created that stuff, or the stuff was just there and we don't know how it got there. Those are your basically, if you're going to take the Big Bang Theory, you basically have to accept one or the other of those. The good news is that saying that there's just a bunch of stuff, that's all we know, is as much a claim that requires a certain amount of lowercase f faith as there is to say there's some infinite being who's separate from the universe, who's uncreated, but he also created the earth. So is that like, can we prove that 100% ironclad? No, but neither can they. So we're in the same boat. Isn't that nice? We just capitalize our faith. Okay, so basically, the argument that I would say, this isn't like, when I think about like, when I wake up in the morning, I say, should I be a Catholic or not? This isn't the question that usually pops into my mind, but for some people it is. So, can something come from nothing? Just like, I don't know, if you just use kind of like your mind, at least when I do, to me the answer has to be no. What's one attribute of God? He's eternal. That God is from all time. Now, maybe some people's brains say, I can't accept that. But one nice thing about God, this classic diagram. So, can something come from nothing? I say no. God is a trinity, so I was drawn as a triangle. Okay, God is infinite. God has existed from all time. He doesn't exist like that thing exists. He just is. He's being itself. And his existence is the same as his being. He's always been. Sometimes a little hard to grasp. Yes. Always hard to grasp. But God created. We have trees. We have me. You. We have fish. We have football. Guns. This is creation. One system of thinking says is pantheism, where everything is God and God is everything. So, you know, I feel the divine in this state, this pulpit, what do you call it? Podium. It's called an ambo and it's in a church. That's a ambo. That somehow God is in this thing. And we say, sometimes it's confusing because we say God is everywhere, right? You've heard that before? God is everywhere. Well, he is everywhere, but he's not everything. Does that make sense? So he's in this room right now. Hi, God. And he's not, I am not God. This is not God. You are not God. Together, we are not God. God is separate from his creation. He is not his creation. God is not his creation. He created outside of himself. But it was good. We know from the account in Genesis, what's more important than the calendar days? The fact that God said everything is good. There's a lot of other creation myths. One is a little bit PG-13, but can I share it, Mrs. Martinuk?
I think we're all a little okay. 13.
Yeah, good. So, Kronos, oh, I forget his wife's name. The Greek myth, Kronos was big bad Titan god, and he was, you know, attracted to Mrs. Titan god, whatever. But then he basically rapes her. In the act of raping her, some other god comes and cuts his genitals off, and the resulting things that fell from him fell to this earth, and that was the first human beings. Isn't that nice? That's where we come from. That's great. That's Greek. Okay, another one is the Babylonian myths. Okay, so everyone has creation stories. Sometimes people say, well, every religion has a creation story, so I mean, they just all... No, they say very, very distinct things. And these are older than the Bible, too, a lot of them, especially the Babylonian one. Babylonian one, this, I can't remember, some battle, basically, we spread, it's kind of similar, something falls to the earth, we spread out, and it's based on violence. And we are created by Marduk, the god, one of the chief gods, to be slaves. Also nice. Isn't that nice? So, this is the classic catechism question for Catholics is, why did God make you? God made you to know, love, and serve him in this life and be happy with him forever in the next. The Babylonian catechism is, why did Marduk create you? To be slaves. Okay, I'd rather be Catholic than to be Marduk slave. Okay, so the Jewish creation story is very distinct. What's one quality of creation? It's good, and humans are very good. That all creation was good. St. Blessed John Henry Newman said once that when he looks in the mirror, there's only two things he knows. One, that all creation has a purpose and it's good, and that something's gone terribly wrong. So we see a lot of bad things in the world. I'll mention that soon. But What's more notable is that there's a lot of good things in the world. More notable than the chaos is the good things. God created from nothing, theologically, but in the scriptural account, God brought order to the chaos, the formless wasteland. That's what the first verse of the Bible is. God brought order to chaos. So we see a lot more order in our lives than we do chaos, which is one proof for God's existence. We take note of the chaos much more. Spoiler alert. So what is news?
It's fake.
Yeah, fake news, right. Now, what does that word look like? New, it's things that are new, right? So if you open up the paper, you sit, you drink your coffee in the morning, you open up your paper, and the headline is, big letters, Bill does his job. Okay, and then another story is, sun sets, sun rises again. Huge news stories, right? No, because those are the things that happen every day. People generally do their jobs. The sun generally rises and sets. The things are pretty much the same all the time. What we read in the news are things that are new. They're outliers, you know? Guy shoots up a place. That's a new thing because usually that doesn't happen. Now, unfortunately, every day it happens more so today, which is sad. But those things that happen, guy gets arrested. That means, if you're reading that in the newspaper, that means most guys aren't getting arrested. If you read one day, man survives day without going to jail, that means things are very wrong. But if the news is really bad, that means, in general, things are actually going pretty well, right? Does that make sense? Does anyone buy that? You shouldn't buy it. No, it's true. That when we plant a seed, what usually, like an oak tree seed, not in North Dakota, what usually happens? A tree grows, right? Given the right conditions, a tree grows. Things generally work the same, that a baby fish turns into a big fish. If things were random, then a baby fish would become a horse all of a sudden. Okay, that never happens. There are weird things that happen which make people think, oh, things really can be random. But in general, things move towards a certain purpose. Does that make sense? We can look at everything in creation and see, yeah, things are generally kind of moving in one direction. You don't usually have like a Benjamin Button case where, all of a sudden man gets younger. It's like that never happens. There's a certain progress that things make. And things are made for a certain purpose. So this kind of starts to get at the why. There's a fancy Greek word, which I'll wow you with, telos. It's just sit here, inclined towards me. Everything has a goal. Sometimes you'll hear an end. Not an end like finish line, but like a purpose. Goal and purpose. But basically, all things have a purpose. What's a plant's purpose? To grow. What's an animal's purpose? To grow while running around in a circle. What's our purpose is a little different. We're created how in the book of Genesis? In the image of God. That we're different than a dog. You can love dogs. We're different than a dog. We have the ability to think. We have the ability to choose. We're not just... We are animals. Someone was asking, are we animals? No. Yes, actually we are. We are very much animals. And so we have a lot in common with dogs, right? We like to eat, we like to sleep, we like to drink, we like to have sex. We do all the things that dogs do. But we do some things that dogs don't do. Namely, we're not bound by our instincts, that we can make choices not based on what my body's telling me. Like, your body could be like, eat. And most of the time I do. But every once in a while, I have to make a cool-headed decision. I'm going to say no. I will not eat. Okay. It's the same for all of our passions, that the animal part of us is able to be accepted or rejected by our mind. Dogs can't really do that. They're just kind of, they can be trained by who? Us. But they can't make rational decisions. Monkeys, very close, but not really, because monkeys, apes to ape something, imitate. They just learn from us. They can imitate us, but they don't make, they don't build buildings. They don't create art. They don't do any of that stuff. G.K. Chesterton, who's a fun guy if you want to look into kind of fun Catholic readers, G.K. Chesterton said, like, the amazing thing isn't that cavemen were so primitive by looking at their drawings, right, cave drawings. It's the fact that they were drawing. That's amazing. And even the caveman is infinitely more advanced than our most advanced chimpanzee. And there's no parallel. If you want a scientist to say it's all evolution, can a Catholic believe in evolution? You betcha. But it has to involve something that says a human being has this infinite difference than the smartest chimpanzee or whatever. What's the smartest animal? Rhesus monkey? We'll say chimp, just a dolphin. Okay, dolphin. Okay. There's something different between us. Can we say that the human body evolved from protoplasm 4 billion years ago? Sure, go ahead. If that's where the evidence leads you, go right ahead. You can't say with 100% confidence, because science says you can't say with 100% confidence. But you can say, yeah, if I want to think that I evolved from some primitive creature, yes. But at some point, the image of God was put in me where I can reason and I can think, which an ape can't do, chimpanzee can't do, dolphin can't do, Fido cannot do. Okay. So our goal isn't just to grow, isn't just to run around. And we know this. It's to know and to love. That the most important things in life are knowing others, knowing ourselves too, and loving others, loving ourselves too. That what's most important in life, relationships. That you see it all the time. When floods come through, destroy everything, they say, well, at least I have my family, right? Like, it's just very obvious on a very basic level. Who do you think the most important person that we need to know and love is?
God.
Always the right answer. God! Relationship with God, yes. Always God. But even if we don't know and love God, it's still important to know and love other people. So the human being is unique, that relationships are the most important part. We don't eat our young. We don't, you know, do all this other stuff that lions do. The lions eat their young. Black widows? I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a biologist. The most important thing is that we have, all things have an end and a purpose, and human beings have a different end and a purpose. So for one reason, I would say that that is an evidence that it's not just random, right? All of a sudden, this thing just doesn't go away. It also doesn't start to float. There's order in the world. Science, this is good. Science itself is based on the fact that we can know things, that there's predictability, right? Is there a lot of unpredictability? You bet. But if there was zero predictability, then we couldn't have science. Science is based off of predictability. I'm saying if I do X and Y every time, that Z is going to happen, right? And that's, now, if you know all about relativity, you can give me a lecture afterwards on why that's wrong. But even relativity has to have some predictability, otherwise it's just chaos, right? You can't study chaos, because why would you study chaos? If everything is just randomly happening all the time, then I have no time for random. Not to mention, for you personally, it has a huge impact on your life. If you're just random, that's a very sad life, right? If my whole life is an accident, the only meaning is the meaning that I assign to my life, that's sad, I think, right? It's much more enjoyable to discover what my purpose is. My main purpose is what?
Relationship
with God, right. My main purpose is that. And then also my relationship with those around me. So that's my purpose in life. And discovering how that plays out is very interesting on a daily basis. If I had to assign my meaning, that would be very difficult. Like, all of a sudden I think like, oh, you know, I'm going to be a Major League Baseball player. Try and pursue that. It's like, obviously not going to happen. So like, okay. What other thing do I need to figure out? If it's just random, if I just assign my meaning, well, I'm going to be the funny guy. Okay, not that funny. Great. You know, or whatever else. You're just constantly searching for meaning, as opposed to, like, there is a meaning for your life, and you're sitting, and you're learning, you know, by reflection and by prayer, what is that meaning in my life? And the nice thing is we know already our meaning in life is to know, love, and serve God, love our neighbor, and ultimately to be happy. The goal of Catholicism is to be happy. Isn't that nice? Doesn't seem like it all the time, but that's the goal, is to be happy, not to be obedient. Islam means submission. Like, the goal of Islam is to be obedient. The goal of Catholicism is to be happy. So, that's fine. So there's other arguments for God's existence. The one that, like, I think of is, do I have a purpose for my life? Is there a reason that I exist? Or am I just kind of a complicated accident? I prefer to think that there's some purpose for my life. Another one is, if not God. So sometimes if I'm like doubting my faith a little bit, or like just, I'm like, is this real? It's like a really thick book called The Catechism. There's a lot of stuff in there. It's like, a lot of people don't believe this. Is it real? But then you go to like, well, what if God doesn't exist? That kind of gets back to the random thing of like, it's not just like a 50-50 thing where it's like, God doesn't exist, God exists. I think there's a lot of evidence that God does exist. But what if he didn't? Is it improve my life much? Yeah, I could go out I mean, if I say, God doesn't exist, I'm going on the first plane to Las Vegas and live it up, because finally I got those Ten Commandments that are junk. I don't have to listen to that stuff anymore. I can go crazy. Yeah, ooh. You know, how long would that be, like, interesting for my life? That wouldn't be that great, right? After a weekend, I'd be like, huh. That's it? That's all there is? Is that really? Okay. So if I ever come up with a better, like, articulation for what my life means that comes from God not existing, then I'll be the first one to say, yeah, Catholicism's fake. But I've never come up with that. And honestly, like, if I actually came up with that, I would not be Catholic. But I haven't ever come up with that. Because I do like to think, and, you know, an atheist say, well, it's just, you know, like, what helps you go to bed at night. Well, I believe that there's a God who loves me, who cares about me, who's looking out for me, and that I have an eternal destiny. And if that's a fairy tale, well, even if it is a fairy tale, which it's not, is it really? Say I die and, like, I don't exist anymore. Is it really that much better that I would have known that on Earth or when I die? No. And actually, sometimes it does help me go to bed at night that I believe God exists. So is it better to say I'm just a cosmic accident and then die and find out you're right? And I'm the fairy tale guy and I had a little nicer life because I thought there was a God that took care of me and boy, was I wrong. No, we both don't exist anymore. So, But this is Pascal's wager. It's not a great argument, but it's kind of fun. But if there is a God and you're like, I'm going to Las Vegas, this is great. And you find out, oh, there is a God. And I'm like, oh, it isn't a fairy tale. Then, okay, I'm better off. No, but seriously, that it can sometimes seem like, if you think about it, like, am I just telling myself this to make myself feel better? Well, one, you have the thought that God could exist. Why do you have that thought? That's a good question. If God didn't exist, why would you think that God would exist? And why, I would say, this is a non-scientific guess, but I would say, ...99.99% of people in the history of the universe have thought that there is some greater power than human beings. Okay. You look at any ancient civilization. Now, did they believe in the one true God? No. Did they believe in, like, crazy myth city? Yeah. But they believed in something, right? It's very significant. Even in our secular age, where we have computers and everything else under the sun, that even in our secular age, the vast majority of people on Earth today, even in secular America, even in secular Europe, the vast majority think that there's something outside of humanity. Do you think that's a mistake? You think it's like if humans were at 10,000 years old, whatever, if that's a 10,000 year mistake that we're just finally trying to get rid of, an atheist would say, yeah, we just need to evolve from that. Or maybe that we all have a point, that there is something outside of us. I would like to side with, in this case, the 99.99% of yes, there is something outside of us. It's funny. It's funny that even today, that would still be true. That even if it's like 80%, like why do 80% of people think that there's something that they've never seen before? We all believe in Mount Everest, but there's a certain. It doesn't just come from not everyone. Yeah.
Well, isn't it because like we all have that void inside of us that needs to be spiritually filled? I mean, do Catholics believe that?
Yeah, 100%.
Jesus is in your heart.
That's what I'm saying. That we have that every person has something. You look at this earth in the face, and you look at everything on this earth in the face, and you say, there's something more out there. I think we all have that.
Right.
Okay. And that I have some sort of happiness that I'm destined for.
Yeah.
And there's a certain way to acquire that happiness. Yeah. Then we're getting further down the road. We're just talking about God in general right now. So, but that God exists. There's other arguments of like, okay, things are in motion. Something had to put those things in motion, blah, blah, blah. Either you have to say that there's some God that created with a finite beginning, or that you just have to say that there's always been things that have existed. Well, it makes more sense to say that there was something that there was a clear beginning, because this doesn't make any sense. That's another nice thing we have with the atheist boat, that we're in the same boat. We don't know how things began, but if you're going to say that something has always existed that's caused, like, you know, who begat you, your parents, the protozoa, you know, tree, whatever, no, that came later. if you're gonna somehow say that there's something that's always been, that's no more reasonable than to say that God exists and he created. So they could say, you're just saying God exists because that's easy. Well, okay, but I'm no worse boat than you are, you know? The biggest argument against God's existence is, why do, this goes more beyond, like, not just Mount Everest that exists, but, like, a loving God who knows you and cares for you. So you have, like, a 7-year-old girl who dies, okay? So, obviously there's no, like, greater tragedy than losing a child, right? There's no greater evil in this world than losing a child. So you think, if your God is so great and so loving and all this other stuff and all-powerful, so you mean to tell me this God who's so great and so loving and so and all-powerful could have saved this child and he didn't? I don't want to believe in that God, right? That's like a very good argument against God's existence. And it's not one that's easily refuted. If, at a very basic level, you're kind of going based on my argument, the fact of the matter is you have a 7-year-old girl who died. The atheist has that, the Christian has that, right? You guys both have, in your way of explaining everything around you, you have a 7-year-old girl who's died. The atheist doesn't have, you know, there's no advantage over one. The tragedy is still there, and it's a real tragedy. And neither system's going to, like, answer all of your emotional questions or even your intellectual questions like, well, I can explain this. It's like, if you ever try that, don't do that.
Okay.
So, but you have a 7-year-old girl who just died. Which system do you prefer? Do you prefer to say that 7-year-old girl's life who died of cancer, whatever, was she just random, or did she have a purpose in life? And the Christian has the advantage, in my opinion, in this case. Now, does the atheist have a certain point to make that, like, how could your God do that? Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I'm not going to be able to stand here and say X, Y, and Z, bro. It's going to take a lot longer and a lot more of just, like, entering into the mystery of suffering. It's not like a snappy argument. That's actually the absolute worst thing you can do. So there's a great mystery involved with all of it. However, I can say, no, that 7-year-old girl had a purpose in this life, and she accomplished it partially here, and she's going to accomplish it perfectly in heaven. And, you know, gosh darn it, if I don't want to see her someday. Like, that to me is a much more engaging life view than to say, you know, what a hideous tragedy. To me, the 7-year-old girl is not a hideous tragedy. She's someone that has a purpose in life. So, I don't know. That to me, is it a fairy tale? Well, you can think that, but to me, I actually think it's true. But at the very base of it, the problem, they call it the problem of evil. It's a problem for Christians and atheists. It's not just a problem for Christians. So, other than that, there's other arguments for God's existence. Oh, one more. Okay. Give an example. Okay, well, I'll just save on that. I was going to steal your water bottle. But. Okay, I will.
You can't say I can. I'll take yours.
Tell them. Yeah. Too bad. What would you say?
I want my water bottle back.
Yeah, me too. I want your water bottle too. Okay, who thinks it was right for me to steal her water bottle against her will? You saw her face. Who thinks it was morally justified? I'm a person too. I need water. Okay, who thinks it was wrong?
Oh my God.
Just a few. Some people think it's. Could go either way. Okay, that's wrong. The fact that we have categories that there's some right and some wrong is a proof for God's existence. So, if you accept that there's right and wrong, you can come up with a system for that. So, you know, if we all lived like that, then we live in a jungle where we're all killing each other. Okay, that's one theory of it. But another theory is, so in our vision of the world, in our vision of the world, there's God, and then there's like 6.5 billion living human beings, right? If what we think is true, God is the author of everything. He is the one who determines right and wrong. Not just arbitrarily, that's good to remember for future. God, right and wrong is not arbitrary, it's just the way things are. Morality is best understood of like an instruction manual of how to be happy, as opposed to like, I'm God and I will come up with 10 rules to ruin your life. Okay, so that's not what God says. But God does have a certain way in which we're ordered. That's because there's order, there's not chaos. But okay, all of a sudden, let's say atheism. In the old one, who's the greatest being? Who's the greatest being? Very obvious. God. Okay. Now, who's the greatest being? In my opinion, it's me. And I'm going to orchestrate everything around me to amass arms and, like, you know, fortresses to make sure that that is very much established. Okay, but if it's each one of us, then there isn't one standard of morality anymore. Now there's 6.5 billion standards of morality. And by your gut reaction to think that I can take Greta's water bottle, that means that you think that there's some... If it's you, if it's Greta, me, you... That if it's the case that there's no God, then I have my morality, you have your morality, you have her morality. Now, it could be that we all agree on our morality. It could be that you two agree and I disagree. But whatever the case may be, each one of us is entitled to our own morality. Now, if you go to very many philosophers kind of think this way of like social contract. So let's just come up with a bunch of rules so we don't kill each other, guys, because that's what's going to happen. Or you believe that there is some sort of right and wrong out there, and that comes up with if you the way it's a proof for God is to think if there's 6.5 billion people in the world and we all have a mind and we're all able to come up with kind of like principles and priorities, then there could be 6.5 billion moralities out there. Now it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like most people agree on most things, right? Same thing with the news. If it was like, man doesn't kill 10 people today, okay, that'd be a sign that things are going wrong. But the news is that things go wrong, which is comforting because it indicates that things in general go right. Because, according to me, that we're ordered to do the right thing because we're ordered towards a certain purpose. Are we screwed up? Yes. But we're in general, we do the right thing, right? Most people don't go out of their house looking how that they can, like, beat up everyone they come into contact with. Like in general, people kind of try and treat others with respect. That's because we're designed by God and that's how He created us. Now, if you can arrive at that conclusion, if there's one kind of morality that we should all obey, that's probably a good indication that there's some supreme being that's above us. If there is relativism, I just heard a story. Someone was having panic attacks. This is the best thing ever. So kind of a competing. If you don't believe in God, you probably believe in relativism. Most people aren't courageous enough to say that relativism is what they believe. Usually they have some sort of like evolved relativism, but like rare is the man who thinks that everything's equal. Okay, so I knew this person who went to a psychologist, because he was having panic attacks. The psychologist said, there's nothing better or worse about having a panic attack versus not having a panic attack. You just need to embrace that you have. And it's like, no, actually, there is something worse about having a panic attack, and I'm pretty sure because I have experience. No, that's what this person said. Okay, so it's like, if you're a true relativist, you would say there's nothing better than standing here in shelter or standing outside when it's 20 below. It's all the same. You're fine. No, it's not the same. So most people are kind of relativists. They're like, well, we shouldn't like, you know. We shouldn't kill people, but, you know, certain kind of people we can kill. You know, it's like, or I should be able to come up with a way, you know, for my life, of how to live my life, you know. But everyone has principles. You know, there's like certain things you can't cross, right? Like you can't kill people. That's one, in general, the people ascribe to. Now, when it gets on the fringes of like, are there certain categories of people that we can kill? Yeah, then there's a debate, as we see, you know. But in general, people agree that in general, you shouldn't kill. In general, you shouldn't commit adultery. Like, Now, would I commit? Would some person commit adultery? Yeah, but they don't really think it's, you know, okay. So there's different kind of like lines that are drawn. But most people believe that there's principles to live by, right? Most people aren't anarchists. And even anarchists aren't anarchists. If they were true anarchists, they, you know. First of all, why would they belong to a society that had a name? That's already, you're already going into the first level of organization. If you're a true anarchist, you would never belong to anything. So the moral argument is, it seems like we're all acting according to some moral system. And even if we disagree about the finer points, and they're serious finer points that we disagree about, but in general, we all kind of agree that there's certain things that we shouldn't do, then that's a proof for God's existence. What time is it supposed to go to?
6:45.
Okay, I'll show a little video then. You guys ever have questions or anything? Okay. The marker board is much better than videos anyway. There we go.
Can you be good without God? Let's find out. Absolutely astounding. There you have it. Undeniable proof that you can be good without believing in God. But wait, the question isn't, can you be good without believing in God? The question is, can you be good without God? See, here's the problem. If there is no God, what basis remains for objective good or bad, right or wrong? If God does not exist, objective moral values do not exist. And here's why. Without some objective reference point, we have no way of saying that something is really up or down. God's nature provides an objective reference point for moral values. It's the standard against which all actions and decisions are measured. But if there's no God, there's no objective reference point. All we're left with is one person's viewpoint, which is no more valid than anyone else's viewpoint. This kind of morality is subjective, not objective. It's like a preference for strawberry ice cream. The preference is in the subject, not the object. So it doesn't apply to other people. In the same way, subjective morality applies only to the subject. It's not valid or binding for anyone else. So in a world without God, there can be no evil and no good. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. God has expressed his moral nature to us as commands. These provide the basis for moral duties. For example, God's essential attribute of love is expressed in his command to love your neighbor as yourself. This command provides a foundation upon which we can affirm the objective goodness of generosity, self-sacrifice, and equality. And we can condemn as objectively evil greed, abuse, and discrimination. This raises a problem. Is something good just because God wills it, or does God will something because it is good? The answer is neither one. Rather, God wills something because he is good. God is the standard of moral values, just as a live musical performance is the standard for a high-fidelity recording.
Without your love.
The more a recording sounds like the original, the better it is. Likewise, the more closely a moral action conforms to God's nature, the better it is. But if atheism is true, there is no ultimate standard. So there can be no moral obligations or duties. Who or what lays such duties upon us? No one. Remember, for the atheist, humans are just accidents of nature.
Okay, you get the point, I think, right? So it's not like You'll get into this more. I'm sure that we get the, like, fundamental morals or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's just important to know, like, remember, God is not Mount Everest. So it's not just like, God is not just like Mount Everest with the ability to choose things. So he doesn't just arbitrarily choose moral things for us to follow like you would in like a video game. That something is good because it conforms to God, who is pure goodness. Okay, so when we're talking about these things, it's just important to remember that we're just kind of at the first stage. We're not talking about who God is in himself. But that gives a little hint. But it is important to know, like, if I say something is good, what do I mean by that? Do I just mean according to my viewpoint? And first of all, my viewpoint changes a lot. And second of all, I have a different viewpoint than you do, and you do, and you do, and you do. And so how could we even agree on things? We'd have to sit down and, like, come up with a bunch of stuff. Like, these are our principles. Well, if we did that, it would probably also reveal that we have things that are in common. But it's not like I say, you know, I'm really passionate about killing. I don't think we should kill. Okay, and then you say, well, I'm really passionate about stealing. I don't think we should steal. No, it's like we all kind of know that. So that's it. That is a little proof for God's existence. If none of these appeal to you, then it's not the bigger deal. But these are just kind of some of the proofs for God's existence. For me, meaning over randomness is the one that convinces me most. And the benefit of believing atheism, because atheism takes just as much belief as Christianity, that believing atheism is no more beneficial to my life than not believing it, and in fact a lot less. So that's why I'm Catholic. Any questions? Objections? None. No questions? Oh, I did a bad job.
That just means you did really good.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I tell myself.
Yep.
Was anyone here, like, convicted of atheism at some point in their life? What changed that for you, if you want to share? You don't have to. You can pass, it's okay.
I guess one of them is just the fact that even an atheist will believe in these objective moral values, mm-hmm. and it's not like they got them. It's just kind of something you know just as much as night and day.
Right.
So, yeah.
Hmm. So it'd be more like the moral world, the moral view.
I think it's kind of the point too about that old appeal, because we see it all around, even if you're just not objectively proving it, but like if you look at the data behind it, you know, everyone kind of laughs at the we want to win the lottery, but none of them have ever been happy. Or like
right.
The suicide rate with famous people, or, you know, everyone who's got it all and are really, like, destroyed inside, and they can achieve anything they want, have all the power in the world, and be miserable. And there's been ones who've overcome that. A lot of them are saints now, because they had everything, and they gave it all away or whatever, and that's what actually led to, like, joy in their life. And I think just the widespreadness of how we've seen that in the human condition really helps show that it's that thing we can point to that you can't test for, but you can kind of see it with how your own life maybe has went, or in the lives of others that you might be jealous of or think you should be jealous of. So
I agree. And it's funny how we want more. It's like, I think we all say that in our lives, like we want more. Sometimes like more chocolate chip cookies, but like a lot of times like more at a very deep level. And you can get, there's nothing that even satisfies you. And the only like marriage advice ever that's like I find is helpful to give, that, well, no, it's like kind of, it's not original, but I just say it, whatever. It's like you don't look for your, based on what you said earlier too, of like that there's something in ourselves that has this, like, that's basically an infinite desire. Don't put on your poor spouse the responsibility to fill that desire in your heart. But if Billy thinks Linda is going to be his everything, or if Linda thinks Billy's going to be her everything, like, not only is that not going to make you happy, that's putting like a lot of pressure on your spouse to be that for you, where they just can't do that. Like, Bill's a good guy, can't be everything for you. Because why? Relationship with God. That's the one thing that can be. And on this earth, so why do you say, oh, I see Catholics, and they say they have a relationship with God, or Christians, or whatever, and they're still kind of annoying to be around. Well, on this earth, our relationship with God is imperfect. So we're all, you know, on the way together. But at least you get that foretaste of, like, beginning a relationship with God, you know, that kind of begins to satisfy your longing. In heaven, it's complete. But on this earth, we're all just kind of doing our best to have a relationship with Him. So don't be too... Sometimes people, you know, Gandhi, he's like, I love Christianity except for Christians or something like that. It's like, okay, Gandhi. You know, the whole point of Christianity is that we're fallen, like that we make mistakes. So we were created good, but by two chapters of Genesis human history, we've already screwed up pretty bad. So I mean, like John Henry Newman said, I know that this earth has meaning, that my life has meaning, and I know a lot of things have gone wrong. So that's true for the world. It's true for, you know, your family that you grow up in. It's true for you. It's true for me. But we just, you know, we're wounded. We make stupid decisions. And so why you would think that the Catholic Church would be, you know, immune from that is, you know, you have to look at that. And then secondly is something a priest told me once about the seminary or whatever. It's like, people complain about things, like if you complained about the Catholic Church, like, well, if the Catholic Church was perfect, you wouldn't be able to get in, you know? So just to kind of have that a little bit of humility too, of like, I'm a sinner too, and that's like the first step. The church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, that the door is like this high. So even, I'm short, but it's true for me. That like you have to like bow down to get into it. It's kind of like a symbol for heaven, that like you have to admit like I'm not God in order to get into heaven. So you have to admit that I am not infinitely perfect in myself. Like, I might be a good guy, you know, but I'm not perfect. That's like stage one of being a Christian. Only God is perfect. And Deb.
So what do you say to people that, because like, I've had family members say, I don't believe in God, He wouldn't let this happen to me.
Yeah.
And I know you talked a little bit about the 7-year-old girl and mm-hmm. ship purpose, and that draws comfort, but to the person who's so stuck on that this bad thing happened and they don't want anything to do with faith anymore.
Yeah.
Like, where do you go from there?
So, like, I would say the most important thing to say is this. You know, that if you enter into it like thinking that you're going to say something that's going to solve that, then you're probably off already. Basically, what you want to do is just show them love, you know, in that situation. You witness. So, like, I have to say, like, siblings who aren't Catholic, would I want them to be Catholic? Yeah, obviously. But, like, at a certain point, I know that argumentation isn't really... So what do? I show them love, I pray for them. You know, I try and witness with my own life that Catholicism is helpful. Yeah, and at a certain point, it's just like, but, I mean, you can talk about it sometimes, but you have to wait for the right moment, you know. The way, one of my favorite books, if you're looking for, oh, what could I read? This is one of my favorite books of all time. Three Philosophies Life by Peter Craved. So the book of Job in the Old Testament is all about the problem of evil. Job has everything. He's got a wife, he's got a bunch of kids, he's got a bunch of cattle, and who could ask for more? He's got all that. And all of a sudden, in one fell swoop, just by being tested by God, everything's taken away from him. All that Job is left with is himself. And basically for 40 more chapters, like, he's kind of complaining about that, justifiably so. And in the end, God says, basically, you know, were you there when I created the world? Were you there when I, you know, separated the light from the dark? Were you there when I created the giraffes and all this other stuff? Goes through it. That's like another three chapters of God just going through it. Okay, God, yeah, I get it. And that's it. It's just kind of, God kind of says, you're going through a bunch of bad stuff in your life. I'm God, you know. You know, there's not like a great argumentation for that. And Job ends up by saying, The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That sometimes God gives, sometimes God takes. Blessed be God. That's more of the Jewish kind of, or Muslim maybe even. But that's the question. Job kind of raises the question of suffering. And the answer isn't in God's speech. It's in the fact that he sent his son and redeemed suffering for us. So that suffering for the 7-year-old girl, for the family member, whatever, isn't meaningless. That there's actually a very beautiful meaning, namely that the worst thing our world could throw at anything, right, is death. There's nothing worse than death. And when God came to our earth, we threw at him death. And he knew that. That's what, he entered the world knowing, I want to save these people, or these people are going to kill me. It doesn't get much more horrible than that, right? That we would kill God. Think about it. Okay. And yet, from that suffering didn't come, you know, nothing. It came the resurrection, you know. It's the tomb. That from suffering comes something greater. That God always brings greater good from suffering. And at a certain point, you just have to trust that. Now, if someone loses their, like, 7-year-old daughter and they can't bring themselves to love God, like, I assume that he's going to have a little extra mercy on them, you know. But I certainly can't. You really can't argue, unless they're kind of like at, they got to open the door a little bit. This is my personal advice, you can do whatever you want. But this is kind of the whole theology of what it, like, that meaning, right, you got to start with meaning. How could God do that? Well, sometimes it's dark, but we have to just believe that he's going to draw some greater good out of it. And then, I mean, heaven is, you don't want to always go to, like, pie in the sky, but heaven does help of, like, the family member that you lost, they still are. Like, if you're a mom who lost your child, like, your only child, well, you're still a mom. Especially, not just, like, a former mom, but your child is still alive, you know? So, heaven does help. Now, if you're really cynical or whatever, you'd be like, well, it's just like a fairy tale you tell yourself. And, like, there's a certain, like I said, there's a certain way in which you could kind of sympathize with someone like that, but basically you're just trying to get them to see this, that God didn't answer, why is there suffering, and a good God. He didn't answer it with a written response. He answered it with his actions. So that's really what we should do, too. Does that make sense? It's not like slam dunk answer, but I, to be honest, that book is really good. This is another good one. For Lent. Death on a Friday Afternoon by Richard John Newhouse. So, those are a couple of good books about suffering. This is just like my favorite Catholic book. If you're like really hardcore, like old school, whatever, this is what we go through in class. Although it's a little bit hard to get into, I'll just write it down. Near Christianity. It's written in a very British 1940s style. But some people really like C.S. Lewis. That's where I took, especially the moral argument, that comes from him, kind of. G.K. Chesterton's fun. Orthodoxy is a good one. He's like drinking from a fire hose. So he's kind of, in my opinion, best consumed in like small nuggets. So he's a very unique way of writing. Those are just some book ideas. The Bible. It's a bestseller, number one bestseller of all time. Okay. But it's hard to just read the Bible. I'm sure that we go through like introduction to scripture stuff. And
well, I think you're actually teaching that. So.
We'll get into that one. It's a great book. Could have used an editor. Anything else? 1 minute left. Questions? Oh yeah, again. 21st century RCIA. Thank you very much. See you in the future. If anything I said, if your desire to become Catholic was lessened in any way by this, I apologize and don't hold that against the church. Hold it against me.
So. Take it up
with Father. Yeah, take it up. It's my fault. Sorry.